Hello, I'm Andrew Fizakis. This is number 0126, the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0126. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, you'll meet Michael Carrier, who is the author of Innovation for the 21st Century. He talks about the changes in copyright laws and how it can affect what you do on your computer or even land you in jail.
The world is changing fast, technology is changing quickly, and so the problem is not only that laws can't keep up, but that those that have copyrights in music and books and things like that are trying to change the law to protect their business model right now. That could hurt the rest of us.
Singer-rapper Ricky Jay, who left the performing side of the industry for a while to learn the business side. Why did he do it?
I want to learn different things. I think I've learned a few things in the business. And I was like, you know what? I like being an artist, but if I can learn the back end of it, if I could try and handle another artist, maybe it would help me become a better artist and learn how to deal with different situations in a different light and not become one of those artists that make all kinds of money and then they lose it. And then, you know, I like to earn mine. I like to earn my keep. So I really wanted to learn all the different aspects of it.
Luna Labou, who is the British woman behind the website isthisyourluggage.com. She buys lost luggage from the airlines and puts them up on her website for people to find. Has she received a lot of press attention for her site?
Yeah, I've been on a couple of radio stations. Not very much in England, actually, which is a bit strange. A lot in Canada and Australia and America. In Germany.
And of course, we have lots and lots and lots of stuff and an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0126, is science writer Andrew Fizakis, the night sky guy. And by the way, he has been nominated for a Shorty Award in science. That's a Twitter award honoring the best producers of short content in social media. You can vote for Andrew. I encourage you to do so. And I have put a link for the nominations, or at least to the nominations, on the Stuff File What's On page for this show, which again is number 0126, which is what Andrew told you. And thank you very much, Andrew, for doing the slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. Good luck with the Shorty Awards. And now, let's get to the Stuff File news, shall we? You know, I pity the police officer who has to fill out the paperwork for this bozo. Officers in Madison, Wisconsin arrested a 30-year-old man for parole violations. The guy used to be named Jeffrey Drew Wilski. However, this past October, he had it legally changed to, wait for it, Bizow Doo-Doo Zoppity Bop Bop Bop. Yes, Mr. Zoppity Bop 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 was arrested after residents complained of his alleged excessive drinking and drug use near Reynolds Park in Madison. He's tentatively charged with carrying a concealed weapon and possession of drug paraphernalia and marijuana. Well, his name is moronic, so I guess it kind of fits. And they say clothes make the man, and one defendant certainly made a strong first impression at his court appearance in Broward County, Florida, thanks to his choice of attire. In court to answer to drug charges, our unidentified friend wore a shirt with printed instructions on how to make crack cocaine. Yes, attorney Michael Weinstein, who was in court on another matter, snapped a quick picture of the defendant and said, "I realize the gentleman who was up at the podium in front of the judge charged with trafficking is wearing a jacket with a how-to manual of how to make crack cocaine. I couldn't believe the gumption that person had." Weinstein said the judge at the court appearance remained completely professional and did not comment on the man's choice of outfit. Another dim bulb in the courtroom. And this may just be the world's worst dad. His name is Saad bin Nasser al-Shaari in Saudi Arabia, and after his government shut down his illegal debt collection business, he decided to make money by offering his young son for sale on Facebook for $20 million. Welfare officials had denied his request for aid because he's older than 35, which is the age limit for receiving benefits in Saudi Arabia. His Facebook ad said he wanted to avoid living in poverty. Unfortunately for him, child trafficking in Saudi Arabia is illegal, and the post apparently violates Facebook's content policy. So he's been arrested. Happy Father's Day. And keeping with our bad parental theme, this may be the world's worst mother. 58-year-old Joan Barnett works as a parent coordinator at the High School of Hospitality and Management in New York City. Well, she used to. Allegedly, she forged a death certificate for her own daughter to get extra vacation time. Don't worry. She's been fired. According to investigators, Barnett submitted an altered death certificate to get approved leave time in March and April of 2010. In addition to losing her job, Barnett pleaded guilty to a misdemeanor forgery charge last fall and was sentenced to 10 days community service. Happy Mother's Day. And in Jupiter, Florida, 62-year-old Janet Knowles was arrested on charges of aggravated battery using a deadly weapon after she allegedly hit a 65-year-old man, which was, by the way, her boyfriend, on the head with a hammer. When police arrived, the unnamed victim was holding bloody paper towels on his head. The victim told police he was watching Judge Judy on television while sitting on his recliner when Knowles got upset with Judge Judy and then hit him in the head with a hammer. Fortunately, he did not have to be hospitalized and was treated at the scene by Palm Beach County Fire Rescue Crews. Okay, this is just another reason why I don't watch Judge Judy. We have one more story to get to before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Now, here's another free pro tip for you. If you have an outstanding warrant on a rape charge, it might be best not to flirt with a uniformed police officer. San Francisco police said the 26-year-old man, whose name has not been released, was taken into custody after he tried to strike up a conversation with a female officer. The officer was inside a parked police cruiser at the time. Yes, a marked police cruiser. The officer told the suspect she wasn't available but asked for his name. He gave it to her. She ran a check and turned up an outstanding warrant, so Casanova was arrested on the spot. Sometimes it's great when your job just comes to you, don't you think? Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. What if you were sent to jail for forwarding a YouTube video to a friend? What if Justin Bieber were sent to jail for singing cover songs? What if your favorite websites were no longer available? Those are questions to ponder when thinking about our changing world, intellectual property laws, and the internet. On the line with us right now is Michael Carrier. He is the author of Innovation for the 21st Century. Hi, Michael. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So is part of the problem the fact that the world is changing so fast, that laws can't keep up with them?
So that's part of the problem. The world is changing fast. Technology is changing quickly. And so the problem is not only that laws can't keep up, but that those that have copyrights in music and books and things like that are trying to change the law to protect their business model right now. That could hurt the rest of us.
So some of those questions that I hypothetically posed in the introduction, are they possible?
Unfortunately, they are more than possible. There is legislation that the U.S. Congress is considering right now in the House of Representatives. It's called the Stop Online Piracy Act. In the Senate, it's called the Protect IP Act. And this legislation would basically destroy the Internet as we know it. And so all those questions you asked in the introduction, unfortunately, they all could come true if this law passes.
Now, the one thing about the Internet is that when we think of being online, the first three letters are WWW, stands for World Wide Web. So from that perspective, even if laws are enacted, is it a problem enforcing it, considering that people can be literally anywhere, or their domain name or their IP address can come from anywhere?
That's right. And so that's why the copyright holders, Hollywood and the record labels, are so worried about the internet and worldwide distribution. So you have a music file, it could be sent all over the world, and there are these so-called rogue websites, these bad websites out there. They're all from foreign countries. And the concern is that they're allowing users in the United States to download these files and not have to pay for it.
Now, I understand in the U.S., the Department of Homeland Security seized hip-hop music blogs that were not even infringing on copyrights?
It's really amazing. So you have these music blogs, and part of what these blogs do is try to increase awareness of new music that's out there. In fact, the record labels themselves use these blogs to promote their music. So they'll say, here is a new track, see if you like it. So the problem is that one of these, DJAZ1, DAJAZ1.com, was sent one of these music files, and it linked to the file, and that's what the marketing folks wanted to do. Hey, buy my music. Unfortunately, the legal folks said, uh-oh, that's our music out there. That should not be there, so therefore we're going to take you down. So what happened is the Department of Homeland Security took down that website, and for almost a year, the website was gone. You could not access it. Admittedly, the Department of Homeland Security recently realized they made a mistake, but notice for 1 year, that site was gone. You couldn't access it, even though the label itself just wanted to promote its music.
Wow. Okay, so from the other side of the coin, is there anything people can do to actually protect their rights online?
So I would say the number one thing to do is just to try to get this legislation from being enacted. And so really there are concerns of overbroad copyright enforcement all over the world, and this is not unique to the United States or Canada. But I think there's really a concern. If the U.S. does adopt this law, that will be a bad omen for Canada and the rest of the world. So to the extent that you have friends or family in the United States, please raise awareness of this issue and call your senator or representative or anyone that is in the U.S. has representing them and say, this is a crazy idea. And so that's just the number one thing to do. The Internet, as we know, has all sorts of issues in terms of privacy and security, and I have not a lot to add to what the audience certainly knows, but this legislation is just so concerning that I would raise awareness of it.
Well, since it is a worldwide situation, a worldwide problem, are there similar situations happening in other countries? Are other countries attempting or wanting to enact the kind of legislation that is being attempted in your country?
So it is happening all over the world. And unfortunately here, the U.S. is often at the vanguard of this, and the U.S. pushes it in their free trade treaties and bilateral agreements. We have a strong version of copyright law, so you, trade partner, should have it as well. And so we really do see this happening all around the world. I think even in last week, Spain, which was usually pretty good at giving some rights and protecting free speech and things like that, came down and adopted a law or made a change that made it more like the U.S. could be. And really, there's this push all around the world because copyright holders worry about their copyrighted works being used online. And so there's a big push to change these laws to prevent that from happening.
Okay, I want to go back to the very first question I pondered in the introduction to you, and because I don't think a lot of people realize the possibility here, since you say all of these questions are basically true, and that is forwarding a YouTube video. Now, it's you see something on YouTube you like, you go to your Facebook page, and you say, I just saw this great video, you put a link into it, that could put you in trouble?
It's crazy. You could conceivably go to jail from that. Now, there's no guarantee they're not going to send everyone to jail that does that, but at least it's possible under this law. If you forward a copyrighted work and more than 10 people see it, you could spend 5 years in jail. And so, again, even though not all of us are going to go to jail for doing this, it's really concerning that this is now going to be a felony under the law that the U.S. Congress is considering, and so we really all have to think twice before we do anything with any piece of music.
Okay, so this is the part I don't get. Something is put up on YouTube. It's basically there for people to click on and see. If I just simply say, here's where you can go, click on it and see it, how am I breaking the law if it's already there?
It's crazy. And just let's be clear here what's going on. You're not the one who's making a copy. You're not the one who's distributing it. And traditionally, that's what copyright law cared about, the person who makes the copy, the person who distributes it. Here, all you're doing at most is providing a link, saying, as you said, look, it's already on YouTube, and I'm saying, if you click on my link, then you can go to YouTube, and that's where you can see it yourself. The problem, though, is with over-aggressive enforcement of the copyright laws, even providing that link is enough to get you into trouble. So that's why we're really facing a tough situation here.
That, to me, would be the equivalent of going to a bar on the Super Bowl, on Super Bowl Sunday, to watch the game, realizing the game's on a giant 80-inch screen, and then calling a friend on a cell phone saying, I'm here at this bar watching the game. Come and join me.
It's crazy. And that's the problem here, that the copyright holders are not going after the direct infringers themselves, the person who makes a copy, the person who distributes it, but rather they are so desperate that they're going after every single person in that chain. And so in your example, in the linking example, they're not the person directly doing it, but they're spreading it really far and wide. So it covers basically everyone.
We have just about a minute, so I want to get to your book. The book is called Innovation for the 21st Century. What will people find out about in your book?
They'll find out about these issues, that the copyright laws, even though they're supposed to protect creativity and struggling artists, are actually being used in ways that we talk about, to stifle small innovators, small venture capitalists, and that's a real concern. And so what I basically do is I look all across the law, not only copyright law, but patent law, which deals with inventions, antitrust law, which deals with competition, says, how can we change the law? How can we get more innovation? Innovation is crucial for economic growth. Our law is stopping it. Let's do something about it.
Are you optimistic that the situation will right itself or be corrected, or are we heading down a slippery slope?
Unfortunately, I feel that not only are we going down a slippery slope, but we're playing the game of whack-a-mole. And so with whack-a-mole, you pop one mole and five others come right up. And so that's the concern here. The copyright holders have been playing this game for a long time. It goes back to the player piano 100 years ago. They're worried about the effect of that on music. And so it seems like we're always playing defense here, that some of the laws that I say we should change in the book of playing offense, we don't really get to because we're trying to stop the worst laws from taking effect. And so, unfortunately, a lot of the times we're just playing catch-up and trying to stop the worst stuff from happening.
The book is called Innovation for the 21st Century, Harnessing the Power of Intellectual Property and Antitrust Law. It's written by Michael Carrier. And Michael, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Michael Carrier, author of Innovation for the 21st Century. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0126. And you'll find links to Amazon.com where you can order the book directly.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands, just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
This is your safe haven from the hard news of the day. The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio for your happy place.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to singer-rapper Ricky Jay, and we'll meet the woman behind the website, isthisyourluggage.com. And of course, there is an idiot of the day coming a little later on in the show. But right now, more Stuff File news for your listening pleasure. And I gotta keep saying this. We've said this time and time and time again, but apparently people aren't paying attention. Haven't we already made this perfectly clear? If your drug dealer shorts you, steals your money, or provides a substance other than the illegal one that you sought, do not, we repeat, do not call 911. It will not help your cause. 47-year-old Suzanne Basham of Springfield, Missouri, found out the hard way after she called 911 to report that she had paid $40 for crack cocaine that turned out to be sugar. Miss Basham, who apparently was not seeking a sugar high, asked police to arrest her dealer for theft and, of course, get her a refund. Officers did go to the address where Basham said she purchased the crack, but the residents there denied selling it and refused to let officers into their home. On the other hand, since Ms. Basham was in the possession of a crack pipe, she was cited for possession of drug paraphernalia. This, you know, could have been the idiot of the day. It came oh so close, but it's not. That comes to you a little later in the show. Moving right along, police in Nigeria are holding a goat handed to them by a vigilante group, which said it was a car thief who had used witchcraft to change shape. A police spokesman from the Kwara state has been quoted as saying that the armed robbery suspect, and I'm doing air quotes here, would remain in custody until investigations were over. But another police spokesperson told the BBC the goat was being held in case its owner claimed it. The belief in witchcraft and the power to change shapes is common, apparently, in Nigeria. Police reform activists have condemned the arrests, saying it highlights the low education levels of many Nigerian police officers. Nigeria's Vanguard newspaper has a picture of the goat and reports that police paraded it in front of journalists in the Kwara state capital, but this was denied by the national spokesperson for the police, that would be Emmanuel Ojukwu. The vigilante group, he said, arrested the goat and took it to the police. Then they told the media. The next morning, journalists turned up demanding to see the goat, he said. But of course, goats can't commit crime. Yeah, but they do make a fine dinner. Police responded to a 911 call from a Toys R Us store on Hayden Island in Portland, Oregon, because a man inside was attacking customers. He allegedly assaulted three people and then went out to the parking lot with a weapon in hand. Police tried twice to use a taser on him, but he deflected the attack. Eventually, police pinned the 33-year-old man to the ground. The unnamed man was taken to hospital for mental evaluation, after which he faces several criminal charges, according to Portland Police Bureau spokesperson Sergeant Pete Simpson. The reason for the mental evaluation may be due to his choice of weapon, a toy lightsaber from Star Wars. None of his alleged victims required any medical attention. Obviously, he is not properly trained in how to use the Force. In also in Portland, Oregon, a farmer, Levi Cole, was just trying to teach his rabbit cooking class. Problem is, the dozen rabbits slated for the class were all stolen by a volunteer group that calls themselves Rabbit Advocates. The group was caring for the bunnies and hoped to buy them so they could live as pets and be spared the fate of rabbit stew. The theft occurred the night before Mr. Cole's class on raising, slaughtering, and cooking rabbits. Police caught up with the group, and all the rabbits were returned, save one small gray rabbit named Roger that police believe is still in foster care. No charges have been pressed so far. These people must really hate Elmer Fudd, and also the movie Fatal Attraction. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here with me, Peter Anthony Holder, the Bible teaches us to love our enemies and treat others as we would have them treat us. Now, those seem to be hard concepts for the Christians of Cranston High School West in Rhode Island. Student Jessica Alquist is an atheist and wasn't too crazy about the prayer banner displayed at her school. After all, the Constitution does have very clear directives in the United States about the separation of church and state. Anyway, a federal judge ruled the banner unconstitutional and ordered it taken down. Since then, Jessica has been barraged by taunts, abuse, and threats of physical violence. Threats that have only intensified since the banner's removal. Oh, the irony. Yes, the irony. Anyway, shall we get to our next segment, our next guest here on the program? Let's do that. In just a matter of moments, we're going to hear from rapper, singer Ricky Jay. But before we hear from Ricky, let's really hear from Ricky, a bit of his first smash hit, No Means No.
It all started at the mall. You were standing at the wall, so I went to give my number, couldn't wait to get your call. I even promised you I would act and play nice. Romance, your day's right, we chat for late night. Weeks later, while I'm kissing you, say what you're doing. My head going up on your leg, I thought you knew. And if you really want it, baby, show me so. I wanted you from the beginning, girl.
No means no.
But I really want to hit it, girl.
No means no.
I could do it for a minute, girl.
No means no.
I just want to get up in it, girl.
No means no.
I can't believe you never did it, girl.
Your eyes, I see.
That's true. Caress you on your neck and then rub your back too. Always got money on me to pass you. Come to think about it, girl, I never seen your tattoo. I thought you really loved me when you told me so. Now it's time for you to prove it, girl.
No means no.
But I really wanna hit it, girl.
No means no.
I can do it for a minute, girl.
No means no.
I just wanna get up in it, girl.
No means no.
I can't believe you never did it, girl.
No means no.
But I really wanna hit it, girl.
No means no.
I can do it for a minute, girl.
No means no.
I just wanna get up in it, girl.
No means no.
I can't believe you never did it, girl.
And on the line with us right now is someone who hails from right here in our hometown of Montreal, Canada, but he's soaring to new heights in the entertainment industry. Ricky Jay, who first came to our attention with a song you just heard a little bit of, No Means No, is still getting toes-tapping with songs like What a Night, which you'll hear a bit of a little later on. And he joins us on the line right now from California. Hi, Ricky.
Hey, man, what's up?
Thanks for being on the program with us.
Thank you, brother.
You've been keeping very busy over the last little while, but you took some time off from performing to get into the more of the business side of the entertainment industry. What made you do that, and what made you step back out in front of the microphone?
Just, you know, I want to learn different things. I think I'd learned a few things in the business, and I was like, you know, I like being an artist, but if I could learn the back end of it, if I could try and handle another artist, maybe it would help me become a better artist and learn how to deal with different situations in a different light and not become one of those artists that make all kinds of money and then they lose it. And then, you know, I like to earn mine. I like to earn my keep. So I really wanted to learn all the different aspects of it.
So how is the Ricky Jay from No Means No different from the Ricky Jay of today?
Oh, I'm smarter and wiser, and I know how to drink a little bit better. there is a difference because everybody in time, they take time to grow and grow in their own way. And I just learned a lot more, and I have a lot of better contacts, connections, relationships, because this is what the entertainment game and any kind of business is like. You need relationships, and I think I'm less naive. Like, I get it. I get the business. A lot of people understand. I also get the business, so it's just, you know, everybody needs that growth time. I'm a different person in terms of business mentality. In terms of who I am, I'm still, you know, good, fun guy. I like to enjoy myself. I like to party. I like to be a clown. I get my little 2 cents of corniness sometimes when I have to be. So I'm still, you know, all around same Montreal boy, just, you know, just trying to do it on a different level.
Well, it's interesting because you brought the point that you got to know the business and other people got to know that you got to know the business. How important is it for others to know your business acumen as a performer?
I believe it's very important because you go further in your conversation. Like, I'm still a young dude. I'm still doing what I have to do. But when, you know, when I'm talking to an executive or a manager, and they say certain things, I'll be like, oh yeah, I know this person that, you know, has done this, and or this situation. To be like, oh wow, you really know your stuff. You're not just here for the fun, you know, the glory aspect. You're here to learn, you know, the business side of it. So they get me, and you could politic and speak to people on a different level rather than just say, hey, I made a great song, listen to my song, it's a great beat or whatever. You are able to carry a different kind of conversation and go different levels and be able to connect with different people on a different level, like different executives, where they'll look at you and they'll be like, oh, he's an artist, but he also knows his game. Okay, he knows what he's talking about. Oh, okay, we can talk.
You mentioned earlier, kind of offhandedly, that you know how to drink better since the days gone by. One of the things about being in the business you're in is there are a lot of pitfalls along the way. How did you navigate through the minefield that is a successful music career without falling in?
God bless. I had a great mom, a great father when I was growing up, so I had some freedom. Everybody does the little stuff. They sneak out of the house, you know, they miss school on a few days and, you know, decide to go to the club or something. And I was always gifted to be around people. I've seen a lot of different things. And I guess maybe just by being in those circumstances, just never made me really want to get into it too much. And plus, when I drink, I like to have fun, but I really do not like the hangover or the sickness part. So I try and stop myself a little bit before, so I'm good the next morning, I'm good to roll out. And, you know, I think it's just really being open to different things and being able to be around certain things that I was just like, hey, that's not really me. I'm a party guy. I like to do my little drink and like to see my girls. And if I drink too much, I won't remember the girls. So, hey, I might as well just stay straight.
Let's talk a little bit about the music. Who were your musical inspirations when you were growing up?
Everybody always says Michael Jackson. I'm going to fall into the same thing. I'll be like, Michael Jackson. I always had different music being played, so I was always listening to, I heard the old school stuff, I heard the new school stuff, you know, I always liked LL Cool J or the Boyz II Men when they were coming out, and I just got hit with everything. So, you know, I like even rock, I like the U2s, and then my father would listen to Elvis, so I won't listen to Elvis 24/7, but, you know, I'll get one or two of the songs, and I'll listen. So a lot of different musicians and period inspired to what I do. And I mean, I just do club music. I like to enjoy myself. So a little bit everybody to today. I mean, I like Black Eyed Peas. I like, you know, different people, like to The Weeknd, who's from Toronto. He's doing more, you know, R&B. So I take a little bit from everybody.
Now, your background coming here from Montreal, you're in L.A., it's like being a big fish in an even bigger pond. Is being in the music industry and breaking into the music industry in the United States different, tougher than doing it here?
It's different. It is different because, you know, the U.S. game is very big, and it is a lot about who you know, what kind of money, what kind of budget is being put in. Where, yeah, Canada is a wonderful place to learn and get out there because we're smaller. We have 30 million people. The states have 300 million people. So it's a little bit easier. But the same kind of politics on different levels. So it's good that I've adjusted and I've learned how the Canadian game goes to, yes, it is more difficult here, but here it's more about persistence. And if you do have something good and you keep on knocking and you keep on showing up at these events and being around the right people, you will make a name for yourself. But again, it's LA and California is a great place, but it's one of those places where you have so many celebrities and so many people trying to break in. Consistency is very important. So you got to just stay on it and be out there and, hey, be around the right people, knock on everybody's door, say, hey, I'm here. Look what I've done in Canada. I've done pretty good by myself. Now it's time for me to rock it here.
I asked you who your musical inspirations when you were growing up. Let's talk about your musical inspirations for your music. What inspires you to write and perform the stuff that you do?
I've always been a club kid, right? So since 15, I was sneaking around to the clubs. I always liked interacting with people. So I'm like, what could I do to interact with people? Well, how can I be in the club and
still give the people, make them dance, forget about the stress, forget about the bills, forget about anything real negative, no gangster stuff, just go out, have a good time, you know, me sing about different party experiences or different even experiences with girls or some or certain situations, but bring it to on a more positive level or just a more party atmosphere vibe. Just let people dance. I like it when people dance. I like it when people are in the club having a good time and they don't really care what's going on tomorrow. They know it's coming up. They know it's coming tomorrow. So I just like, you know, it's people. People give me that energy. People give me that inspiration. The club watching the DJs play a new hot record. Other artists coming out with records and like, hey, I gotta be the next song played in the club.
Where do you see your career going beyond what you've done so far? Are there things that you haven't had a chance to do or things that you want to do that you're looking forward to in the future? Goals and dreams?
Well, I was always told to take one thing at a time, and that's what I'm trying to do, but I really do want to eventually, you know, drift off into the acting because, you know, I'm always around cameras. I'm pretty all right at it, so I'm trying to follow Will Smith's path. You know, head to the music, do what you got to do, and then if it ends up being movies or TV that I attempt or achieve at, or even dibbling and dabbling in some radio stuff because I like radio. I've always been a fan of radio and satellite radio and all that. So I think there's a lot of things I haven't done yet and that I want to achieve, but I think it's going to take, you know, step by step, baby steps.
What's up for you immediately? What's next?
I got two videos we just shot. We're going to start releasing them in Canada shortly under my distribution and my people in Canada, Frostbite and E1. So we're going to start releasing that in Canada slowly, working on a French version of one of the singles for Quebec, for the Quebec market. And now I'm just working on getting my promotion and marketing and everything set up strategically for the U.S. market and just put me out there. I'm going to be at around a lot of events. I'm hanging around for the Grammys. I'm going to be here. I'm trying to hit up some Oscar events just to, you know, perform out. I'm probably doing some performance stuff and just getting out there. You know, it's the networking capital. Got to get out there and then start working on the next music to come, the new single, and redesigning the website. I'm involved in a lot of aspects of the career, so I'm a little bit all over, just trying to make sure everything fits in the puzzle.
So basically, you do the business part of show business, and then you do the show part of show business.
Yeah, exactly. A little bit of both, but I'm going to have to start delegating. That's what people are telling me, so I got to find people to delegate to.
Well, I'm glad you found the time to talk with us a little bit here. Ricky, I thank you very much for being on the program with us.
No, thank you. Thank you, bro.
Rapper and singer Ricky J. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0126, and you'll find links to Ricky J's website. And right now, we have just a snippet, a little bit of his song, What a Night. This is What a Night with Ricky J, here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Where you going? Loving the way you love. You know this party here is strictly off the hook. Got Patron, got the Henny, now we doing it. And by the morning, you know we be chopped and screwing it. Oh, oh, what a night, I'm feeling fine. Got the party started and we going overtime. We at the bar, oh, we doing shots. We with these girls.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
I'm Bob Dorico Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. There's an old saying that the squeaky wheel gets the grease. It means people who complain the most are more likely to get their way. I don't know if there's a saying about broken wheels, but I'm afraid about what people around the world are going to say about America when they hear this next story. A woman in New York sued a toy store after a wheel fell off a plastic wagon she bought there. According to reports, she's not suing over injuries. She's mad about the $15 she paid the store to assemble it. Her lawyer is quoted as saying, "If they charge people to assemble it, they should do it correctly." Let's be fair. I agree with the lawyer on that point. The toy should have been assembled properly. But fixing this problem should have started with a trip back to the toy store, not a lawsuit. An expensive lawsuit by a squeaky lawyer just greases the way for making toys more expensive for the rest of us. Because eventually, the cost of all these lawsuits is passed on to those of us who buy these products. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio for now and forever, unless the Mayans were right.
And still to come on the program, we will talk to the woman behind IsThisYourLuggage.com. And of course, as always, there is an idiot of the day. But before we get to that, we have more Stuff File news right here for your listening pleasure. After 12 almost intolerable months, Ms. Simona Sumasar finally received justice in November from a New York City jury, which convicted Jerry Ramratan for orchestrating a complex and ingenious scheme to convince police that Sumasar was a serial armed robber. Ramratan, a private detective and CSI fan, had used his knowledge of police evidence gathering to pin various open cases on Sumasar as revenge for her having dumped him, and also to negate her claim that Ramratan had raped her in retaliation. Now, Jerry was so creative in linking evidence to Sumasar that her bail had been set at $1 million, causing her to spend 7 months in jail. Said one juror, "If I had seen this on TV, my reaction would be, how could this really happen?" Wow, that is scary on so many levels. And also, someone who watches way too much television. And that's saying a lot coming from me because I watch, admittedly, way too much television. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. There's a woman in London by the name of Luna Labou who started an interesting pastime and website. The site is called IsThisYourLuggage.com. It features lost luggage. Now, Luna buys the luggage at auction, then photographs them and puts the pictures on her site. Luna's on the line with us now from the UK, and first of all, thanks for joining us, Luna. I have to ask right off the bat, what gave you the idea, and how did you start going about picking up luggage at auction?
I'd seen the, it was when Heathrow Terminal 5 opened, and they'd lost a lot of luggage, and I started to wonder where all the lost luggage was going, because there was loads and loads of it. And on the internet, I discovered that there's this auction, and just out of pure curiosity, I thought it'd be quite interesting to see what someone else had in their luggage. Then when I started opening the luggage and looking at it, it became quite obvious. You could see what the person was like who had the luggage, and I began to feel quite guilty that I had someone else's stuff and thought it would be a good thing to get it back to them.
So what? It's at an auction, so how much do you pay on average for somebody's lost luggage?
About £20. I'm not quite sure what that would be.
So that's about 40, 45 bucks. That's not, in the grand scheme of things, that's not a lot of money.
No, it's not really.
Wow. And then there's certainly, I'm assuming, inside the luggage, well, there would have to be in most cases, more than 20 pounds worth of stuff inside it.
Yeah. I mean, they're packed full of clothes. And people take brand new clothes on holiday, so it's all, if you wanted to, you could sell it all off, I suppose.
And now that I think about it, I mean, forget what's inside. The luggage itself is worth more than 20 pounds.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're not giving that stuff away. So do you buy this stuff sight unseen? Do you get to open up a suitcase and see what's inside? Or do you just bid on basically a suitcase and that's it?
Yeah, you bid. Well, you know whether it's got men's or women's or children's clothes, but that's all the information you get. You can see the suitcases, but they're all locked up and you can't open them up. So you are buying. It's a bit of a lucky dip.
Now, do you know if the airlines have opened them first?
I think they do open them. So, I think it's kind of for security and to check to see if there's anything inside that identifies people.
So they're basically gone to all the lengths that they can, supposedly, to identify who owns this particular piece of luggage before they auction it off.
Yeah, I mean, I've never found anything inside the suitcase that would help you find somebody. There's never any kind of names or addresses or numbers or personal details.
So before you started this website, which again is thisyourluggage.com, how many pieces of luggage had you purchased?
I think when I started it, I think I had 5. And I think now I've got 11.
Okay, so you've got 11 pieces of luggage that you've purchased at the average of 20 pounds per piece, and you put up this website. Now, just by the title of the website, is this yourluggage.com? I guess you're assuming that people are going to go to the site and recognize the items. What do? You take all the items out and you photograph them so that people can see what's in them?
Yeah.
Have you heard from anybody who said, hey, wait a minute, that's mine?
Well, I had a couple of people quite early on that emailed me, but then when I asked them more questions, they said that it was that they wasn't really their luggage and they just wanted to see what I said. But then recently, since the it's been on Canadian TV, I've had 2 emails from people saying that 2 of the pieces of luggage are theirs. But they haven't got back to me yet. I emailed them to ask them for more information because obviously I want to make sure that they are the right people rather than just giving it to anyone. So I just asked them about the size of some of the clothes and where they were from, but they haven't replied yet.
Now, when you photograph the items in the piece of luggage, do you photograph everything?
Yep. Yeah, I take it all, lay it all out, photograph it, and then...
The reason why I asked the question is I was thinking perhaps maybe if you had kept a few things that you didn't photograph, it would be a way of somebody saying, well, I see the picture of everything, but you don't have my gray slacks or whatever, or something to leave out something so that you know distinctively that it's theirs.
Yeah, I mean, I did think about doing that, but then I thought with my luggage bag on holiday, unless it was one of my favorite things, I think I might not have remembered it.
Fair enough. So, are you getting a lot of press coverage?
Yeah, I've been on a couple of radio stations. Not very much in England, actually, which is a bit strange. a lot in Canada and Australia and America and Germany. But, yeah, those countries seem to have picked it up quite well, but not so much in England yet.
So now that you've done this and you're getting some notoriety, is this spurring you on to buy more luggage?
Yeah, I'm just saving up to buy some more, and then I'll be back to the auction and pay more on the site.
What is your day job? What do you do when you're not buying luggage?
I'm an art director, like a designer.
Okay. Of the stuff that you picked up, is there anything that's your size? I mean, do you look at some of the stuff in there and you go, oh, wow, I'd like to keep that?
There is some nice stuff, some really nice stuff in some of the cases, but I never really see the luggage as belonging to me. It always belongs to the people who do actually own it. Though I legally own it, I never really feel like it's mine. So I feel naughty wearing somebody else's stuff. I feel like it's doing something wrong.
Okay, so what if you have this website now, which again is thisyourluggage.com. This stuff has been lingering for at least 90 days with the airlines. It's now at auction. You now have it. You put it up on the website. If nobody claims it, what do you plan to do with it?
I'm not sure yet. I think because I really want people to get back. I haven't really thought that far. I mean, at the moment, storage isn't too much of a problem. They obviously take up a lot of space. But I'd like to keep them as long as possible. People have offered to buy them off me, have emailed me and said, can I buy this suitcase? But I'd like to keep them for as long as possible so that I can try and find the people that own them, because I just really love to find an owner.
Have you done any detective work? I mean, is there anything about the luggage that would give you an idea, not necessarily who it belongs to, but maybe what part of the world it comes from?
Yeah, I mean, I think in a few weeks I'll update the site with a bit more information on some of the cases. There's one that's definitely from, got quite a few Scandinavian labels in. There's a couple that are, I think one's from Mexico, I think, because it's got some Spanish labels, but I think it's probably more Mexican than Spanish. And I think there's one from where they visited Africa. It's quite difficult, really, because you could maybe guess where they've been on holiday or where they'd maybe come from. Just because their luggage ended up at Heathrow doesn't really mean they intended to pass through Heathrow. It might have been that they intended to go from, say, America to China, and their luggage ended up in Heathrow by mistake.
How often do they have these auctions, by the way?
The auction house has an auction every week.
Wow.
They don't always have cases, but most weeks they have at least 50 to 100.
Now, you're going back there to these auctions. Are you becoming a regular? Do you notice other people who also regularly go to the auctions? Are they aware that you're doing this website?
There are people that regularly go. I think most people do it for a living. So they'll buy the cases. They'll buy a lot of cases, and then they sell the contents. They don't know what I'm doing. I don't think they'd really like it, to be honest.
Why don't you think they'd like it?
I think because after the Heathrow Terminal 5, a lot of journalists became quite interested in the suitcases as well. And it pushes the prices up. There are people, 'cause the odd person will turn up and want to buy one, just out of curiosity like I did. And then the price of the cases go up because there are more people bidding on them.
And we should mention that the airline, they donate this money to charity, correct?
Yes, yeah, all the money goes to charity. All the profits from the cases go to charity.
Because I know there are some people listening to this right now probably thinking there's some sort of nefarious plot afoot by the airlines, you know, that this is a great way to make money. They just lose your luggage and then sell it at an auction, make it an additional profit, but they're not making any profit on this at all.
No, and they must lose quite a lot of money in having to compensate people for losing their cases. So I think they would really like to get everyone's cases back. And as I say, they do have to get rid of them because so many cases do end up going missing that they can't store them all.
Again, the website is thisyourluggage.com. It's run by Luna Labou. And I thank you, Luna, for being on the program with us.
Thank you. Well, thanks for having me on the show. Thank you. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Luna Labou from the website isthisyourluggage.com. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0126, and you'll find links to Luna's website. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
Three suspects were arrested after allegedly stealing beer from a California convenience store, then returning to sloppily erase their tracks. Oscar Jimenez, age 19, Eduardo Salgado, age 18, and a juvenile whose name was not reported, allegedly stole beer from Dooley's Liquor Store and Market in Santa Clarita about 10:30 p.m. Detectives allege they returned a half hour later, drunk, and asked the clerk to hand over the surveillance videos. Los Angeles County Sheriff's Lieutenant Tom Brisky said a scuffle ensued. One suspect allegedly brandished a knife and cut the store clerk on the arm. The clerk needed stitches. What would have been a misdemeanor theft charge suddenly became felony for assault with a deadly weapon. The three escaped but were apprehended a short time later. Now, the question has to be asked. Why would you rob a store, get away, then go back and try to get the surveillance tape? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0126. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. And at the website, you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and again, that's 0126. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com, and you can find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. older. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. No animals were harmed in the production of this program, except, of course, the tasty ones. Good night and pass the paprika.